Perek Aleph Pasuk Yud Beis. We're in Sefer Devarim, guys, in Parshas Devarim. And there's a line that Moshe Rabbeinu says over here that's very, very strange. Eicha esa levadi torchachem masachem b'rivchem. How could I bear alone your burdens, and your quarrels? All the different issues that you guys have, the toreach you have, the busyness that you have, the masas you guys have, and the riv. How am I going to bear it alone? So Rashi says, simply put, that Moshe was telling the people that even if he knew how much he was being rewarded for this, even if he knew what was going to be in Olam Haba, nonetheless, he would still not be able to do so. The amount of schar that I'm getting for it is not worth the amount of effort that I'm putting forth over here. Yeah, I'm going to get rewarded, but this effort is crazy. It's just too much for me to bear. That was Moshe Rabbeinu's line over here. And the proof is that Hashem told me to make judges. Hashem told me I can't do it by myself. And like, at first, I thought maybe I could do this. Maybe something could happen. Maybe something could be there. But I can't. I see clearly that I'm not able to do it. If HaKadosh Baruch Hu was telling me to make judges and to go away because I'm not doing it well or I'm not doing enough, that shows me that I'm not able to do anything, no matter how much reward. Mi'am Loi says, Moshe Rabbeinu was willing to do everything. He was willing to do everything, even if he wouldn't have gotten a bigger reward. Moshe Rabbeinu was saying, I would if I could, but HaKadosh Baruch Hu was telling me no, and therefore I'm not going to be able to. And the truth is that this is a question we have to ask ourselves whenever we do something. Is the reward, sometimes the punishment, worth the amount of effort that we're putting into it? And sometimes it's not. And even so, you still have to push yourself through and do it anyway. When it comes to child rearing, taking care of your kids, and as they grow up and dealing with them and all the different issues that come through there, sometimes the reward is not always worth the effort. Sometimes the effort that you put in is going to be more than what you're going to get out of the relationship. Hopefully that is never the case, but unfortunately there's a lot that goes in, and sometimes it takes a real lot, and you don't know if you're going to see the reward or what ends up happening from your kids. But you do it because that's what HaKadosh Baruch Hu wants from you at that time, and you do it with a smile. You do it as best as you can, and you show your kids how much you love them, even when it's very difficult. And that makes all the difference by so many different people when you do such a thing. Yosef Hillel actually brings down a girsa that says this out, and there's a panim yafos and a chsam sofer over here, but we're going to skip those out for right now. The word torchachem, we're going to go through each one of these words. Torchachem, ma'asachem, and rivchem. What do they mean? So Rashi says Bnei Yisrael were lacking in the midah called nitzachon. Whenever they went up against another person, they wanted to win. They had this desire to always beat the next person. If someone would come in, says Rashi, with a proof and that he was about to win, the other guy, the guy that's losing, would get up and say, wait a second, I have more proofs. I have other people to bring in. I want more judges. And they would ask for something to be changed because they didn't want to lose. They never wanted to lose. If it would be a pshara, a compromise, they could deal with it. But to lose, they didn't want to lose a court case. And they would do anything to push it off a little bit. Says Rashi, that was a tirka, that the judge is looking at the case and going through everything and saying, all right, here's how we're going to paskin in this case. And then all of a sudden, a guy said, wait, no, I got a totally different way of going about this. That was a massive, massive tirka. Now, the Ramban points out one part in Rashi. He says, you can't add on judges toward the end of a case. You can't do that. Like, if there's a case that's going on in Beis Din, you have three judges up there, then all of a sudden, if a guy comes along and says, I want more judges, you can't just add on judges. So the Ramban understands it. There's a Gurayi and a Mizrahi here as well. But the way the Ramban understands it is, in the beginning of the court case, if a guy says, I want to have five judges, like, I'll choose two, you choose two, and then we'll choose one together. It's almost like Zavla, Zebor, Lo Echad, and Sanhedrin. But if they do that, that you could do. You could add on to the three judges that are already there, says Ramban, and even more so. The more judges you have, the better the court case is going to be. The more people involved, the better it is, says the Ramban. That's what he's referring to over here. The Netziv tries to go through this as well and also explain that that's what's happening over here. But the basic idea of Torchachem is there's a lot of bother that goes into dealing with these court cases, all the different issues over here, and it's not easy. The Sforno says it's not dealing with a court case. Regular fights. There was a tirka between one another, and there were issues in which each guy was dealing with the next, and things people were fighting against each other. There were real fights, and there might not even have been real claims, but there were fights with one another, and said Moshe Rabbeinu, I can't deal with this anymore. Ibn Ezra says, a little bit different, try teaching Torah to some of the people in the nation. The Ibn Ezra says, there were some really dumb people among Klal Yisrael. People that just did not get it no matter what Moshe Rabbeinu told them. And says the Ibn Ezra, that was the tircha. Do you know how hard it is to teach someone who's just not getting it, and you say it over and over and over again? Rebbe Preda had that one student who he taught something to 400 times. That is a massive tircha. Now, the chiyuv of any Rebbe, and any Rebbe will tell you that even if the child is not understanding it, you go over it again and again and again, and usually it's you that you're not teaching it correctly. Because if you were teaching it correctly, the child would be able to understand it. So you have to look at it as yourself. What did I do wrong in trying to help you understand that? But nonetheless, as Ibn Ezra, that's a tircha. That's what's required of a Rebbe, but it's a tircha. It's really, really hard to do. The Ramban says it a little bit differently. It does have to do with learning. Torah Chacham is learning, but he says, teaching hundreds of thousands of Jews is not easy, even if they're all brilliant. To be able to give it over to 100,000 Jews, and this is 600,000 Jews, might even have been 3 million if you include the women and the kids and the older people, to teach Torah to all of them was nearly impossible. Not because they were difficult and they were hard to understand and they weren't that smart. They were all brilliant. All of Bnei Yisrael was brilliant. They were getting things. But everyone understands something differently. As we all know, if you try teaching a class and you give everything in one way, certain students are going to love it that way because that's what they're used to. Other students are more visual learners. Other students need something in a more linear fashion. Everybody has something different they learn in their own special way. And for that reason, it was impossible for Moshe Rabbeinu, not because the kids were, chas v'shalom, dumb, but because the kids, the people in Klal Yisrael, were not able to get it all together. Says the Ramban, that's why it was a tircha. It was really a bother to teach it all to Klal Yisrael in that way. But the Netziv doesn't agree with the idea at all. That maybe the Ibn Ezra and the Ramban, both Rishonim, and great Rishonim at that, but says the Netziv, Chas v'shalom, Moshe Rabbeinu was the greatest Rebbe of all time, and he had Siyata Deshmaya to teach all of Klal Yisrael. That's what I would have thought. That everything he taught Klal Yisrael, people got like that, because it's Moshe. It's Moshe Rabbeinu. Says the Netziv, that was not the issue. Huge crowds, he was able to handle it. He had a megaphone for a voice. People that understood it in different ways, somehow they understood it in different ways, and everybody got it in the way that was best for them. That was not the issue. So what was the issue, says the Netziv? The people were not easy to deal with because he had to teach them how to do Gemilas Chesed with the Torah they were learning. There were certain aspects of life that the people weren't easy to deal with. These were people, remember, that were slaves growing up. These are people that are used to being in the Midbar for 40 years. This was not an easy group of people to deal with. Forget about the learning. The learning they got, the chesed and all the other things they had to go through, that was really difficult for them. That was something they could not handle and they could not do. That was something that Moshe Rabbeinu had a tremendous tircha in teaching them how to be normal human beings. Not just learning, but how to be normal human beings. That was the tircha. What's the mas? Oh, before we get to the masa, the Chassam Sofer says you can learn it all from the pasuk before this. Right before this pasuk of Eicha Esol Levadi Torcha Masacham Rivchem, it says Moshe Rabbeinu said, "I'm going to bless you. You should be 1,000 times as big as you are today." How many people do you have now? 3 million. 3 million people among you. You should be 1,000 times bigger. You should have 3 billion people in your nation. Your nation should be 3 billion strong. Yeah. Well, it's just the opposite. Rashi says that after Moshe Rabbeinu gave the blessing, and he said to them, you should be 1,000 times greater, Bnei Yisrael turned to Moshe and said, wait a second. God blessed us that we should be numerous as the stars of the sky or the sand by the sea. He told us a number without limit. And you're limiting the bracha. Moshe, why would you limit the bracha? You were just blessing us that we should be 1,000 times bigger. Bless us that we're innumerous, that we should have no number to the amount of numbers that we should have. The first reaction of Klal Yisrael when Moshe gives them a bracha is what? The first reaction is, that's a terrible bracha. That's horrible. That's horrible, says the Chassam Sofer. When a guy gives you a bracha, a guy says something to you, he's like, you always know when it happens. He's like, you did a great job, but... As soon as that but gets in there, as soon as that word, that one little three-letter word gets in there, he knocks out everything he just said. Literally everything you just said. But you could have done this instead. That destroys everything. I even have, my wife has a person that she went to when she was still in training to be a therapist, etc. So when she was going there, she went, and this person ended up teaching her that whenever you say something, instead of saying the word but, you say the word and. Say the word and. right? Here's what you did. You did a great job, and I think we could do something even better the next time. You know what that does? That changes your way of looking at what that person just said. That's like management 101, where you're looking at the person, instead of giving them muster, 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 you're building them up, and you say, and we can do more the next time around. When Bnei Yisrael looked at Moshe Rabbeinu and they heard the bracha, Sezek Sam Sofer, they looked at him and they're like, okay, 1,000 times is great, but God did more. What's wrong with you? Moshe Rabbeinu looked at them and said, do you guys see what's going on here? I'm giving you an awesome bracha. I'm giving you something that you could never have met. I'm blessing you to have 3 billion people. That's what I'm doing. And you're complaining about it. You're complaining. You're saying, well, that's not good enough. Why? Why would you do that to me? He's showing them that the real tircha behind them is that they don't get what they're doing wrong. They don't even get it. They don't get why they're doing something wrong. That was a tircha, to explain to them again and again and again. And how do we fix that? By being appreciative. By showing hakaras hatov. When somebody does something good for us, sending a thank you card or saying thank you, even though you think it could have been better. What are you going to say, Ethan?
Was it better? Was not good enough? Or was that a contradiction?
I hear what you're saying. And I think most Rishonim would say it that way, that it sounded contradictory. 1,000 times versus enumerated. But clearly, Moshe Rabbeinu was not saying bedafka 1,000. He meant a huge number. So it shouldn't have been contradictory. Instead, he limited it, so to speak. And that's what Bnei Yisrael had a problem with, to which Moshe Rabbeinu was like, yeah, dude, what did you want from me? What in the world could you have wanted from me? That's the idea that Moshe Rabbeinu was saying to them, as if there was something better. Chafetz Chaim says that in order to be, like anybody knows this, if you've ever dealt with customer service in any way in your life, you know that customers are impossible to deal with. They want the impossible within the realm of $7 that they're spending on your product. That's all they want. If they're paying, I'm paying $7, you better believe I'm getting heaven on earth. That's what I expect from you. And that's what the customer service is all about. It's usually not worth it, as we said before. It's almost as if it's not there, says the Chofetz Chaim. But you know that that's what you're going into. If a customer comes in the store and asks for a product, buys it for the right amount, and leaves saying thank you, you should make a Shechianu, because that's so rare. How often do you have a person like that? Says the Chofetz Chaim, so you get used to it. That's part of the tircha that we go through in our everyday lives. And this is part of what Moshe Rabbeinu said. Eicha solavadi torchacham masacham merivchem. You guys have been impossible. I can still deal with it. I can still deal with it. But it has not been easy. And I don't want to go through this, said Moshe Rabbeinu. That was the tircha. Then comes masacham. What's masacham? So Rashi says, Bnei Yisrael acted as apikorsen. Apikorsen. Targum Yonason actually used the word apikorsen and torchachem. But he says it deals with this. Why? They didn't have the proper cover for Moshe Rabbeinu. You know what they said? When Moshe Rabbeinu would leave a shir early, says Rashi, when he would leave a shir early, they said, you know why Moshe Rabbeinu's leaving? He's got some problems in the home. There's some problems between him and Tzipora. That's why he's leaving early. Can you imagine saying that about Moshe Rabbeinu? But that's what Bnei Yisrael were saying. Moshe Rabbeinu was leaving because he had issues. And therefore, he had to get home in order to take care of those issues. When he stayed late, when he wasn't going home, when he was staying a little bit later than anything else, they said, you know why he's staying a little bit later? Because he wants to yell at you and give you a little bit more muster and tell you more mitzvos that you're going to have to keep. They were saying things that sounded like apikorsis. Now, I know this word gets thrown around, it's bantered, as if it means absolutely nothing. What is an apikoros? What does that word mean? So if you look at the word itself, the word apikoros literally comes from the word, yes, it seems to be based from Greek, you know, apikoman, right, is the same type of word. Apik, though, has a relation to the word that means poke, to go out, to, so to speak, throw out. Resin, in other words, apikorsin, the next word of resin, resh samach nun, is a yoke. The yoke that you put on top of an animal in order to lead it in the right direction. Apikorsin means apiku resin. They throw off the yoke that they have on them and they get rid of it completely. The yoke that Chazal and the great rabbis of our nation have been able to put on us to tell us to go in this direction, they take it off and they say, we can do this on our own. We don't need them. I was just in a meeting with somebody who something needed to happen. And I got to meet with Rabbi First together with this person. And Rabbi First told them, this is what you need to do. You realize why you need to do it. The person said, yes. Can you do it? The person said, yes. Will you do it? No. This is real? No, I'm not going to do it. So I turned over, but you know you have to do it. You know you have to do it. And the person said, I know. I'm not going to. I'm just not going to. It's too hard for me. That's what a nisayon is. A nisayon is a test that you can pass. It's just really, really difficult. This was too difficult for this person to bear. Too difficult for this person to bear. And I am not a judge. I'm not here to judge anybody. And maybe it was. Maybe that test for her was a very, very difficult test and could not be passed. It's possible that's the idea behind it. I have absolutely no idea. But this idea of what an apikoros is, how to define it, is a person who hears what they have to do, knows what they have to do, and throws the yoke off and says, but not for me. I'm not going to take care of it. That's the idea behind it. The best way to find a Kadosh Baruch Hu in this world, as we said before, is to find the tzaddikim and emulate their ways and to see what they do. It's by far the best way to figure out how to daven. I don't know how to daven, but I've seen tzaddikim daven and I've emulated what they do and I try to take it on for myself. Whether it's standing stock still, because that's what I've seen Gedolim do, or trying to put your hands on your chest, the way that the Mishnah Berurah seems to mention in Siman Sadiheh, right? Or somehow being able to sway at the right time in the right place, to be able to know, simply put, whether to do Vekara Zeh, El Zeh, V'yamar. I'm just suggesting. Have you ever seen a Gadol B'Yisrael do that? Vekara Zeh, El Zeh, V'yamar by Kedusha? Have you ever seen it? I've watched. I've watched many, many Gedolim. I have seen one or two, but I just don't see it. But if you look at throughout Shoal, throughout Klal Yisrael, you have the Karazel, Zev Yamar. People are like experts at it. Experts. I think it's even in the Rivvos Ephraim a reason as to why they go from one place to the other because of the Malachim, etc. The Rivvos Ephraim has a whole, Greenblatt has a whole idea behind it. But he was just explaining the Minug. Somehow it started and then everybody does it. But if you watch Gedolim, it just doesn't seem to be that way. That's the idea behind what an apikoros is. An apikoros is, I can do this on my own. I don't need any help. I am my own person. And that's not how we live our lives. That's not how anybody should live their lives. You should have someone in there who can help you become a better person. And usually, that's the sign of what a tzaddik is. Rav Nachman Mibreslov, and I don't quote him often, but Rav Nachman Mibreslov says, anyone who doesn't have emunah and doesn't believe in HaKadosh Baruch Hu feels like they have an extra burden on their lap. It feels like they're taking care of it themselves. They've got a massive backpack with everything on it, with huge rocks laying, just loading down his bag, said he can barely move. And the reason why you can barely move, why you can't get up and you can't get out and you can't do what you need to do, is because you're taking it on for yourself. So what do? You take some of those rocks and you hand it over to the nearest rabbi that you can. And you say, take some of this for me. That's the idea of what you're supposed to do, so that you can lighten the load so it becomes a little bit easier. Because if you're carrying it by yourself, you're right. Nobody is strong enough to carry that load by themselves. But you can do it along with the help of someone else. You can do it if there's someone else with you. That's the idea of what it means. HaKadosh Baruch Hu loves you so much. He doesn't want you to have this burden on your own. So help, have someone help you do it. Bring someone along with you to help you along that way. David Ezra in the Malbim says, this is a different type of masa. The burden was not just the idea of kavod, of showing kavod for Rabbanim. The masa was, he had to feed these people. He had to give them drink. And granted, he had the mun and the Be'er Shel Miriam, which made things a lot easier. But says Ibn Ezra in the Malbim, he had to make sure that a nation of 3 million people was going to be supported. And if for whatever reason, it's not like this didn't happen, if the mun would stop one day and there would be no mun that fell, it would fall on Moshe Rabbeinu's shoulders to find food for every single person there. If for whatever reason the Be'er Shel Miriam stops, who's in charge? It's Moshe Rabbeinu who has to do it. Even when he's sitting Shiva for his sister Miriam, the tzaddikus of the generation who passed away, it's on him and his shoulders to take care of the nation. And when Moshe Rabbeinu got upset, and rightly so, about the reaction of the nation when there's no water for a day and how they were treating him when he's trying to go about bringing that water while still sitting in Avelis, while still saddened over the death of the Patira of his own sister. Nonetheless, this is a masa that any leader must bear. You come second to whatever the people's needs are. And that's something that Moshe Rabbeinu was saying was so difficult for him, says the Ibn Ezra in the Malbim. If not for HaKadosh Baruch Hu being there and helping me and giving me Siyata Deshmaya, I never would have been able to do it on my own. I couldn't. There's no way. How do you take care of 3 million people in the desert by yourself? It's impossible. The Ramban says it's his davening. And this also, this leads to a long discussion, which we're not going to do here. Rabbanim, and you yourself, why do I have to go to rabbis? You yourself, your davening is supposed to be for everyone that you know. It's supposed to be that, look, we all know people who aren't going to be able to daven. We all know that those who are married, our wives may not have the opportunity to daven. Our mothers may not have the opportunity to daven. They've got stuff to do, and they don't have the requirements that we do. Our kids might not have the opportunity or the ability to daven. And when we daven, we're not just davening for ourselves. We're davening for ourselves and our family and our friends. And that responsibility is there. It's on our shoulders. It's a masa. And Moshe Rabbeinu said, my tefillah is taking hours because I have to daven for everyone. Meaning it's one thing if you're a rabbi of a shul. It's another thing if you're a rebbe with talmidim. It's yet another thing if you're the leader of Klal Yisrael. Your tefillah should take hours. Just to mention all the cholim would take hours. To go through all the people who need shiduchim should take hours. To go through all the people that need a Yeshua when it comes to their parnasa should take hours. You go through, a real leader has to go through everything. Said Moshe Rabbeinu, it's a masa. And I can't hand this off to anybody else because it's all on me. It's on my shoulders. That's really, really difficult. For us, we should thank HaKadosh Baruch Hu that our lists are short. Short. Unfortunately, they're still long. But they're still shorter than what they could be. And to be able to go through, one of the biggest curses that I have been blessed with, and I mean this, the biggest curse that I've been blessed with, is that when I'm a rabbi in a shul, and they're waiting for me to finish davening, I can't daven the way that I want to daven. I love it when I'm not davening in a shul where I'm being waited for. Because when I'm being waited for, I have a limit. What's my time limit? I don't know, the 5 minutes that people can handle before they start pulling out their phones and start playing Tetris or whatever, right? Like, it's maybe 5 minutes, and then people are like, oh my gosh, the rabbi's taking so long, it's been 6 minutes, right? That's really, really difficult. But I have people that I want to daven for, and instead, the only time that I get to daven for them is after my tefillah is over, and Hasidim would say that's exactly when you should be davening for them. But the fact is, it's really difficult. It's a bracha, and I thank God for every second of it. But on the other hand, it's not what I would want for my tefillah. I would want my tefillah to be different. Take advantage of those situations when you're not in your shul that you normally daven or where you know you can daven a little bit longer. If you have the ability to be in a yeshiva during Elul, to be able to have a little bit of a longer davening, just 3 minutes extra, 3 extra minutes to your davening. Utilize that. Don't just stand there and space out. Utilize those extra 3 minutes and say to yourself, what else can I add on for my family, for my friends, for other people that don't have this opportunity? That's the idea that the Ramban is saying that was a masa that Moshe Rabbeinu bared and took on for himself. Targum Yerushan is upshot over here. You can check it out. Rivchan. Now, Riv, simply put, Rashi says, means the fights between them. Not necessarily those that go to Beis Din. Those that didn't go to Beis Din. Fights. People had fights with one another, and it wasn't easy for anyone. People had a difficult time dealing with each other. Remember, they're in a midbar. They're living in small little tents. And the tents are right next to each other. That does not lead to very good behavior from anyone. Just imagine for a second. You don't have a backyard. You don't have a front yard. You don't have a house. You just have a tent. There's no room for everybody in there. It's just sort of like everybody's like placed in. You have a bunch of kids, right? It's a lot of people that are all in one big tent. And that's it. I mean, you're camping 24/7 for 40 years. 40 years without anywhere else to go to. You want space? You don't have space. There's nowhere to go. You walk outside of the clouds and there's burning hot sand and a burning hot sun. There's nowhere to go. Absolutely nowhere to go. Just think about that. Rav Victor Miller says the greatest miracle that Hashem ever allowed for us to have is that we were able to sit in tents for 40 years in the Midbar and you don't hear about any murders. You don't hear about anything like that. Because think about it. Think about it. We get angry when we get cut off by a little car, even though it means nothing in the grand scheme of things. Where I'm driving and I saw this guy who's an aggressive, uber-aggressive driver. It was on Pratt. And you know how there's like one lane there? And I'm driving the requisite 17 miles over the limit, which is what everybody does, right? And the guy behind me is on my tail. Literally on my tail. Like, I am not speeding at all. Like, I'm going 10 miles under the limit, right? And he's right there, right behind me. And I'm sitting there and I'm like, okay. So I pull over to the side a little bit. And the guy, what do you think the guy does? You think he like waves high and he's just like, thank you, buddy, right? No, he drives uber fast around me, goes, it wasn't an Uber, okay, that wasn't like a joke or anything, like a rabbi joke, he goes around me, right, passes me by, gives me the little fist wave of just like, and I'm like, oh, thank you, right, gives me a little fist wave, and then goes in front of me, and then brakes in front of me, said I would have to stop really quickly. Now, that did get me within the speed limit, so I thank him for that, because Dina Malchuse Dina and everything. But at the end of the day, think about that. You're getting that angry over what? Over what? Over Pratt? Can you imagine if I was an old... Let's say I was his grandmother, right? I was his grandmother, and he's going around, and he's passing me by, and he stops in front, and he's just like, hey, that's terrible. It's absolutely terrible. Like, why in the world would that be? But that's part of our lives, the rivkan that we get into, the fact that that didn't happen to us. This Sforno says, yes, it refers to the fights that are in court. He goes in and it says the specific types of fights. My friend owes me this. And Moshe Rabbeinu said, I don't have to deal with this. I don't have to deal with these fights that really you could take care of yourself. And Targum Yonason and Ayelas HaShachar both say the same as well. There's an amazing idea behind that Ayelas HaShachar over there, which I wouldn't have thought is absolutely pshat. The Malbim says, if it was just one of these things that Moshe Rabbeinu had to take care of, he would have dealt with it, and it wouldn't have been that big of a deal. But it's one thing after the other. See, if it would have just been Masa and Tircha, he'd deal with it. But Masa, Tircha, and Riva, I can't deal with. All three of them are too much for me to deal with. I can deal with one, I maybe could deal with two, but three of them are too much. I just can't go all the way there. Now, the Meshech Chachma says you're reading the Psukim all wrong. Although everything we set up until now is Moshe Rabbeinu, so to speak, complaining. Or saying, here's what I can't handle. Here's what I can't do. The Meshech Chachma says, the Moshe Rabbeinu was not complaining at all. He begged that these problems should continue for all time. He gave them a bracha. You should have 1,000 times more. And these should be your problems. You know what the problems should be? You're too much for one man to handle. Baruch Hashem, that means there are millions and millions of Jews out there. Who wants a city? Who wants a shul that only has 7 people? You don't want that. You want there to be a lot of people. You want there to be a lot of problems. Good. That's why you're getting paid. That's what you're doing over here. Says the Meshech Chachma, the idea was not complaining. It was a bracha that we should have this many people and deal with it properly, because that's what we're supposed to do. That's the idea behind it. Okay, the Chassam Sofer, by the way, says that Torchachem, Masachem, and Rivchem, Rashi Tevis Mator. Mutter is in rain. That when there's bad things, the rain stops. When you can't handle it, and when it gets a little bit too much, that's when the rain stops. And when you're able to handle it properly, that's when Shefa and good things come down, the rain falls down to the ground. It's an amazing Ksam Sofer, but again, we're not going to stop. We're not going to concentrate on that. There's a Medrash Eicha. Medrash Eicha says this in the beginning of Eicha, in Perek Aleph, Pasuk Aleph, and it says the following. It says that there were 3 Nevi'im who used the word Eicha in their prophecies. 3 Nevi'im. Moshe Rabbeinu, right here, Eicha Solavadi. There was Yeshaya. Yeshaya said the words, how has the city of Yerushalayim become like a zona, become like a stray woman? And then there was Yirmiah, as we all know from Megillas Eicha, right, where he goes, starts off every parak with almost every parak with the word Eicha. Eicha, Haisilavadud, Ha'ira Basiyam. How could the city that was once filled with people now stand alone? Moshe lamenting, how could I handle it? He was saying it at a time when Bnei Yisrael were in their best state, in a state of tranquility. Things are going well. Yeshaya, when they're in the midst of starting to go down, he said, Oyvei, he said, Eicha, the city of Yerushalayim is starting to act like a zona. Guys, we have to stop this now. And then Yirmiah comes by after the Chorban Beis HaMikdash. Really, he wrote this before the Chorban, but seeing a vision of what was going to be after the Chorban Beis HaMikdash. And Yirmiah gets up and he says, Eicha, how could it be that this city now stands alone? Look at what happened at a time when they were truly down. Says the Medrash, those were the 3 times. So to explain this Medrash, we have a few Meforshim. The Shach says, Moshe Rabbeinu said it like this. He looked at it and he said, Eicha, guys, look at the state that we're in. If we keep working on ourselves, then even if there's hard things that we have to press through, hard things that we've dealt with in this world, nothing bad can happen. We'll deal with the bad, we'll bring it up, and things will be better. Yeshaya said, we're starting to act like zonas. The way this is understood from the Ateris Mordechai, is one of the Rebbe Rogoff, one of the Rosh Yeshiva and Skokie Yeshiva years and years and years ago, as well as the Toras Moshe, the Chassam Sofer, the way they understood it is that Yeshaya, Moshe Rabbeinu's time, they had tremendous, okay, there was tsar even at that time. Yeshaya was looking and said, if only I had those problems. If only I had those issues, it would be awesome. But the city is starting to become like a zona, meaning they're leading themselves astray. They're starting to do things out of taiva, immoral ideas, immoral procedures, things that they shouldn't have gotten involved with. And finally, Yirmiyah comes along and says, I've got no one else to talk to because we're so far gone, there's no one here for me to give my nevuah to. Yirmiyah was begging people to listen to the Megillah of Eicha, for Baruch ben Neriah to say it in their ears on the Yom HaTinus. And nobody would listen, nobody was able to listen to them because it was so difficult. He felt like he was walking in with absolutely nothing there. Rav Sternbach in Tamvidah says that this Medrash goes through all three things why these bad things were happening in their time. Moshe Rabbeinu was saying, the cause, the issue that caused all of this trouble was that they were lacking a leader who could take care of them the way they needed to be treated. Moshe Rabbeinu was awesome, but he was beyond their level. He didn't understand where the people were coming from. I can't get your tircha. When you guys complain that you want meat, says Moshe, I look at you and I say, what are you, crazy? Why wouldn't you want the mun? I don't get you. When you guys complain that you're learning too much, said Moshe, I don't understand you. This is awesome. Said Moshe Rabbeinu, you know what the problem is? You don't have leaders who understand you. And that led to the downfall of Klal Yisrael. Yeshaya, he looked at them and he said, you know what the problem is? The problem is that they're zonos. They're turning the practices of the other nations around them and doing what they're doing. They're finding that other nations are having a great time. Look at that guy. Look at how much fun that guy's having. And they want to do exactly that. And they look at themselves and they say, well, I'm missing something. I wish I could have as good of a time doing this as they have that. I wonder if there ever was a person as glad learning a Tosus and coming up with a Chiddush as the people that you see at the end of the World Series of the Super Bowl when their team wins. That Simcha, I don't know if I can call it holus, whatever it's called, is such a tremendous, like, yeah, like that. And it lasts for what, a second? You're a champion for what, a second? So you can look at the guy next to you and be like, yeah, they lost, they won. And that's that. Can you imagine that simcha? Like, you got a Tosfos, and you, like, look at your chavrusa, and you're like, yeah, I got Tosfos, you didn't. That would be sad, but at the same time, awesome in the same way, and you're looking at it, says the Tamidas. They're looking at the other nations, and they're looking at awesomeness, and they're seeing themselves and saying, we don't have this. We just don't have it. It's not the same way. We're zonas, said Yeshaya. And Yirmiyah, finally, when he said that, it's the reason why the people couldn't follow any longer is because they felt like they were alone. There's no HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Nobody's helping them. There is no God who's on their side taking care of every little thing for them. They felt like they had no God helping them or with them the entire way through. They couldn't stand that. And that's why they felt there was no Rav to help them and they turned away to the practice of other nations. Those three things were what allowed them to think, well, we can't do this. We just can't be around here. Rav Moshe Feinstein says that they were lamenting what was going to be in the future. That each one of them saw something. The Bnei Yisrael were lacking a Midos Tovos. You can check out Rav Moshe and Dorash Moshe yourself. It's an amazing piece. How they mamish felt that they had absolutely nothing left. That everything, all the kokos they had, were becoming completely gone. And Eicha is, how could it be? We can't do it in Eretz Yisrael. Let's try to work on it in Galus. And that's why they allowed themselves, so to speak, to go into Galus. Or while they're, why HaKadosh Baruch Hu felt that Galus is going to work. Because they didn't do it in any other way. Shach says, by the way, that there is a connection between Moshe and Yirmiyah. That Moshe was not a man of words. Yirmiyah said, I am not a man who can speak. That they were related in some way, maybe even through Gilgulim in some way. Yirmiyah said Eicha three times, corresponding to the three different parts of Eicha that Moshe said here, Tor Chachem, Masachem, Brivchem. Says the Shach, the reason why is because all three Eichas that Yirmiyah spoke about represent some type of a tikkun that Moshe was hinting to here. If the leaders are willing to listen to Yirmiyah, then the Beis HaMikdash will not be destroyed and things will be okay. But you need to do what Moshe Rabbeinu said. Moshe Rabbeinu said, I can't handle it myself, I need other people with me. Yirmiyah told the people, get other people to be on my side. We'll all work together and then everything will work out. And if you don't, then we're all lost. We're all going to be lost completely. We're going to end with this. Because of all this pasuk, we see that there are terrible things that happen in the future. Nevuos that were horrible, nevuos that led to the destruction of the Beis HaMikdash. For that reason, this Eicha, which leads to the Eicha of Yeshayah, which leads to the Eicha of Yirmiyah, is purposely sung in the tune of Eicha that we sing on Tisha B'Av night. It's not a coincidence that Parshas Dvarim is always next to Tisha B'Av, and that we say Eicha and we sing Eicha in that way. So we sing it, Eicha, Solavadi, Tachachem, Lasachem, Berivichem. And then you go on with the rest of it. In fact, there are other minhagim that are brought down. This is brought down by the Eish Shel Avram, by the Prima Gadim, in Shulchan Aruch Aruch Chaim Kuf Lamed Ches. It's brought down as well by the Leket Yusher. Then it says that not only should you do this, you should do more than this. You shouldn't end the Aliyah and start the Aliyah with this with the Pasuk of Eicha Salavadi. You should have another Pasuk with it, so it doesn't start with Eicha, with the tune of Eicha. So as if it's something a little bit different. Rav Yosha Ber Soloveitchik of Boston, the Rosh Yeshiva of YU, he said that the minhag in Brisk was to read all the way to Shlishi, all the way to Shlishi for the first Aliyah. That the first Aliyah was comprised of Rishon and Sheni, and not to end by Eicha Solavadi. Not to end there. So that it went all the way together because there was something that was connecting from one to the other. I haven't seen it. Do they do that in Brisk? Yeah, they do that in Brisk. It's interesting. They actually do that. Chabad does not have any minhag whatsoever. And to me, that sounds like a pure idea of what Chabad represents. Because remember, if all of this is about the destruction of the Beis HaMikdash, and all of it is reminding us that Moshe Rabbeinu said Eicha because this was the future downfall of the people, how the people were going down and leading to that, Chabad has the idea of what they deal with, of bringing up the nation and allowing people to believe Mashiach is here, Mashiach is coming, Mashiach is around, sometimes to an extreme, but they have the idea of Mashiach is around at all times. If that concept is there, they believe in a certain type of simcha, something that's in their lives. So don't say Eicha in a different tune. Say it in the tune that Eicha is going to be sung to Lasid Lava. Because right now, says the Chiddush HaRim, right now Eicha is sung in a sad tune. And all of Megillas Eicha is read that way. But in the future, Eicha is going to be read in a simcha dika tune. It's going to be read in a different type of trup. Well, the trup will remain the same. But a different type of way of singing, different cantillation, I think it is, in which they do it in such a way where it's besimcha, where you feel that there's simcha behind it. You can really feel it that way. So to me, it makes sense. Chabad feels that the simcha should be there even then, even when you're reading the Torah. When you read Eicha, you got to do it in the sad tune. That's Eicha. That's where we are right now. But in the Torah, let the Torah be the Torah. Let the Torah be besimcha. Let the Torah bring us up a little bit and bring it in that way. I think, I didn't read it anywhere, but I'm assuming that that's the reason why they don't go into it. They don't have it over there. So we have the minhag to do this. But to remember at all times that it's okay. We've been through a lot. We're on our way out of Galus. This should be the last time that we have to make a siyum in order to have some type of meat or chicken or something like that during the 9 days. And that we should have a massive barbecue on Tisha B'Av morning in Yerushalayim, everyone together. You ask me how we're going to get there, I don't care. We'll get there, we'll have a massive barbecue together, Great Chicago will be in charge of it, and we'll make sure everything will be, we'll have everything together. Have a good Shabbos, everybody.